Karina, how will talk about how to properly open source source code? Give her an applause.
Yes, hello, and thanks. As already was mentioned, my name is Karina Haupt. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a software engineer or computer scientist by trade. So this is all I will tell you is to my best knowledge. I'm not just a developer or software engineer. I'm a head of a sustainable software engineering group. And this is what I deal with, so make software more usable for others. And this is exactly why I'm also a big fan of open source, and I'm an open source enthusiast. And this is why I'm giving this talk today. I work for the German Aerospace Center, where I'm supporting scientists to develop software in a sustainable way. And also, I'm there part of a team which consults people regarding open source licenses and open source publishing. And so this talk is something I talk a lot about during my work, also in my free time, because, yeah, open source fan. So, as the title says, I want to tell you about how you open source your code properly, because most of the code out there isn't open source properly. But it's really helpful. So the idea is that you get away from the right side, where you have your closed source, which looks like a mess, and you don't want to share with people. And this is also an argument I hear the most if I say you should share your code. Oh, it's a mess. I don't want to show it to others. To the behavior on the left, where you say, yeah, Claire, it's there on GitHub. Use it. Feel free. And it's not only about the idea that you're happy to share your code. It's also about the other person being able to use your code in a properly and safe way. And this is the one I want to talk about, how you can achieve this. So let's first talk really quickly about free software. What is free or open source software? So first it was called free software, but this didn't really went well with industry because it sounded like it's free, like in free beer. So they introduced the term open source. And but the thing is, the free is like not in free beer, it's in freedom. So the idea of free software is that the user has all the freedoms. This means to run the software, to copy, to modify it, to distribute it to others, and so on and so on. So this is the idea. I think most of you know about that, but I always include it to make sure. And there's a lot of cases where what you can do with open source. So you can use it, obviously. Nearly all software on this planet, you have the feeling is run or using open source software if it's not open source itself. The internet wouldn't exist in a way if there wouldn't be open source. But it's also about how you make external contributions, get external contributions to your open source project, where you have to think about a lot of things about open source, as well if you contribute to open source. So all of these use cases where you deal with open source sound totally basic, but all of them require you to think about certain things and ensure certain things. Because open source is not just an idea or a mentality, it has a legal basis. So since I'm from Germany, this is a little bit put on German law, but it's quite similar in most of Europe. So in Germany, we have the so-called Urheberrecht. Normally, you call it copyright, which means that you can protect something, but you can't protect ideas and principles. So normally, you have to do like source code and object code and stuff. You can do some things there. The important thing is the copyright says first that if you write something, you own it. So you have some rights on it. But on the same time, if you work for somebody, they get the rights to work with it. So it's like the, in German it's called Nutzungsrecht, so it means you have the right to, great, I'm missing a word in English. You have the rights to do, yeah, you have all the rights to sell it, to open source it or whatever. So you have the rights to decide what happens with it, but you don't get the right, at least in Germany, that you can say you've wrote it. So whenever you write a code, even if you work for somebody else or if you get paid to do it, you're still allowed to say it yours, and they are not allowed to say they did it instead of you. So this is a small differentiation, which is really important. What is important is that it's based on laws, and open source licenses are contracts, meaning if you don't follow them, if you just use something in a way you're not allowed to, then you break a contract and you can get in trouble. So there's civil law and criminal law, which protects the open source developer or the one who writes the code, as well as can be used against you if you don't use software, open source software in the right way. This sounds a bit scary, but in reality, the open source community is really nice. So normally you get a pointer, like you did something wrong, you have to update something, you have to do something to follow certain rules, and then you're fine. So most times when lawyers and stuff gets included in the process is normally when big companies don't agree to that their stuff is protected by an open source license, or they are using stuff which is protected under an open source license and they didn't want to comply, so they get in trouble. So before I start with open source licenses details and stuff, I want to present you a process, you could say, for publishing software, which we introduced at my work, so the German Aerospace Center, and which counts for nearly all companies or where you work when you want to publish something, or even most of the stuff you have to check also when you do it on your own. It doesn't matter if you're part of a company. It's just one or two things which are a little bit special then. For example, the first thing is just when you don't publish your own code, it's still your own code, but one which you wrote while you are employed somewhere or something, or where you get paid for it. So the first thing is you have to ask your organization if you're allowed to publish it. And this sounds really, really default, but in research, a lot of people just publish code without asking their bosses or something. And on the one hand, I love it that there's more open source code out there, but in the end, the problem is that it's not really theirs to decide, because while they have the right to be named as an author, they don't have the right to commercialize or whatever, to distribute the software further, because all of this kind of rights are with the employee normally. So this is normally stated in your contract that everything you do while you work is owned by your employee, so ask him first. Second, and that's where it gets tricky, is to determine all legal requirements and resulting tasks out of those, meaning you have to check, am I allowed to publish my code as open source software? And if so, do I have perhaps something I have to care about, or am I perhaps restricted in the type of licenses I'm allowed to use, and so on? So there's different things you have to think about. The first one is, who are your contributors? Is it just you? Did other people help? If so, they have to agree that you publish it. So as soon as you get an external contributor or your colleague or friend or whoever who works on the same code too, they have to agree to that it gets published, except if it's all owned by the same employee, then they can decide. So you first have to identify everybody so that they, on the one hand, agree if they have the rights, or that you name them at least as an author, because everybody who participated has the right to be called as an author. So you normally write an author TXT or something like that, so that you can say, okay, this is the people who helped, this is the people who worked on that, because they have the right to be named. Then something nearly nobody thinks about is something called export restrictions. And I would be interested if anybody, with a show of hands, if anybody knows what export restrictions are, or have heard about that. Okay, we have like four here, or five people know about that. How many have thought about checking those when you publish software as open source? Show of hands. Nobody. Yeah, that's normally the typical amount of raises I got here. So normally export restrictions are known for stuff like weapons and things, but it's also the same for software. In Europe, it's quite easy to estimate. If something can used or is used in a military way, you have export restrictions. In the US, it's a little bit more complicated because they have this dual use thing, meaning stuff can be used in a military context as well as in a civilian context. And nearly everything is dual use. For example, Microsoft Excel is dual use, because you can use it in a military way to do something, to calculate whatever. So you have to check if it's under the export restrictions, but luckily with stuff like Microsoft Excel or whatever, they are under restrictions, but they don't have any restrictions. So as they are listed somewhere or fits the description of certain categories, but you don't get any restrictions. But there's other stuff which is restricted. So specific cryptography or something, especially if you go to all these things, then you get in trouble if you want to export it somewhere. And if you publish it as open source, this normally means you export it to the whole world. And as I said, in the European law, it's not a big issue, but the US law gets is important for us because it's valid as soon as there's one tiny piece of US something in there. Meaning, if you think about hardware and you have in a whole car or something, one screw which is from the US, one tiny screw, you have to follow the US export laws. And same is for software. And you can perhaps imagine that might be, if you use some libraries or stuff, there might be some code which came from the US, so suddenly it's under US export law, so you have to check. As a private person writing your small game or whatever, this might not be such a big issue. As a research facility, we have to check this regularly, especially that you don't get in trouble. Because the US has some crazy ideas who are evil people, and so you're not allowed to publish it as open source, so you can get in trouble with them. Then, again, this is perhaps a little bit specific for research facilities, but it might be depending on where you work or how you perhaps get some funding for your open source project if you're part of a bigger project. You have to check if there's some conditions with the funding. So, for example, in Europe, there's a research program called Horizon 2020. Perhaps some of you have heard of that. I don't know if you're close to research. And they say sometimes you're allowed to, or you have to publish it as open source, which is amazing if they do this. But sometimes they say it has to be under a permissive license or a copyleft license. And what does this exactly mean, I'll come to a little bit later. But so you have to check what they say. And also it can be that you signed a contract with a company where you wrote something or a part of what you did there gets into your other project. And somewhere in the small letters on page, I don't know, 130, it says everything which results out of this project is not allowed to be published as open source, which is for us, for example, the case with some bigger companies who write this in all their contracts. So everything we produce or get the ideas from in this project, we're not allowed to open source. The best solution is if you have something before which you put in, open source it before. So it's already open source, so they can't do anything about it. But you should always check if you sign some funding contracts, because there can be stuff written somewhere down there regarding the rights or, yeah, and suddenly you have this big, big project or something and there was this one tiny part and now you're not allowed to publish it. Again, something a lot of people don't think about and check. And I don't know, is here some people from research? Show of hands. Oh. Ah, yeah, one, three. So perhaps those of you know the history of research projects is that you get a funding and the next funding and the next funding, and it's over years and years and decades. And in the end, it's really hard to figure out, like, where did the funding come from? Do we have some restrictions? So you have to note all the stuff down early when you get the money. There's no restrictions or something. Note it somewhere close to your project. So it's really helpful later. And now comes this part which everybody needs to do. And this is at least as soon as you use code which is not yours, especially libraries, which is completely normal today, I think, to have some code from others which you use. So you have to check for the third-party code regarding the licenses. And we'll talk about this a lot in the next part. But before I come to one more part, which is if you have done all of this, you will have a set of things which you need to do. So this will be the second part also, or third part. It depends on your count from this talk. And you have to evaluate a little bit, is it worth doing it? In my opinion, nearly all cases, yes, do your stuff open source, do it properly. Work on the project from the beginning that you can do it easily. But sometimes you have to check if the effort is worth it, and especially who would benefit from it. Is there somebody else who would use it? And in some cases, it's true to say, yeah, it doesn't make sense a lot. It would be a lot of work, or we would have to rewrite big parts because of some funding restrictions, or we can't give everything out because of some export restriction or something, and so it doesn't make sense to publish it then. Sadly, that's sometimes the case, but you should always think about, okay, what do I need to do? Is it worth it? So, I stepped quite quickly about this analyzed license terms of third-party code, and this is kind of what open source is a lot about. It's like open source licenses. And that's why we now do a excursus to the world of open source software licenses. And in general, it's really fun to talk, for me at least, to talk about software licenses. Not everybody, it's a kind of dry topic, but I'm happy a lot of people, or some people showed up to be interested in this. And so in general, you can say there's all these software licenses, and there's three types. The free and open source software licenses, which we talk about today the most. Then there's public domain, where a lot of people think this is open source, but it isn't. As well as proprietary. And a lot of people think proprietary means commercial. But this is not the case. Proprietary means everything which is not free and open source or public domain. It can be commercial, but it doesn't has to be. So there's like shareware stuff in the early days, or stuff which is proprietary, but it might be free to use. You might even have access to the code, but it means it doesn't give you all the rights I mentioned in the beginning. So free and open source licenses always give you the right to use, to modify, to distribute, and so on and so on. So you have certain rights you get, and if you get those, it's a free and open source software license. Important to know is that the term open source software license or something is not protected. So there's licenses out there who claim to be open source but aren't. For example, a quite common one is one which states something like, you're allowed to do all the things like for open source, but you're not allowed to use it for something evil. It sounds really good. It sounds like a great idea. But the problem is, who says what is evil and what isn't? To draw a certain line is really, really hard. And again, free and open source software, it's about non-discrimination. So it doesn't matter what you use it for, who you are, where you're from or something. You're allowed to do all the same things. And this is important. So even if it feels like a good idea to exclude military use or whatever, it's not matching the idea of open source software. In the world of free and open source software licenses, there's two types of licenses. I mean, most perhaps know this. One is copyleft, or those with a copyleft. The most well-known is the one with GPL. And these licenses are effective, meaning they come with a moral idea that everything which is free should stay free, even if you modify it. And everything which is building on something which is free also should be free. This means as soon as you get a little bit software which is licensed under copyleft into your code, it all has to be, the whole software in the total has to be free. Often it even says it has to be published under the same or compatible license. Then on the other hand, there's another idea. That's the permissive licenses. Well-known example, there are MIT, Apache, BSD. They come from the idea that you should have the freedom to do really everything. So even put it in a commercial product or change something and make it under, bring it onto your own license. So the idea is really freedom until the end, so everything should stay free. And on the other hand, the freedom to do really everything. I prefer the permissive licenses myself, because I think it's important that we can also use it in parts which might be sold or commercially in some parts, because this can help getting funding. And there's a lot of mixtures and possibilities. Copyleft sounds like a great idea, but can happen that people don't use it because they can't use it on all the stuffs. Also, because of this type of different licenses, we can get into the field of license incompatibilities. The easiest example is if you have two copyleft licenses, which both say you have to publish the result, or the result has to be, the whole software has to be under their own license. The problem is you can't do both at the same time. So if I put two libraries under two different licenses, copyleft licenses, into my code, I have the problem that the software, the one license says the software has to be under this license A, and the other one says it has to be under license B. And while there's something like dual licensing, then each product would still be breaching the other license. So it can't be under same, like the same executable or one you can create can be just under one license. So this results in something I always call like impossible software, because you can build it, you can use it for yourself, but you can't distribute it, because in that moment you breach one of the licenses. And this is a big problem with copyleft licenses especially. So this is about if you have a single license. Picking one is really easy, but if you reuse and combine stuff, it can be really complicated. So what I want to show you now is a really, at first, a little bit like frightening graphic, which is about combining modules under different licenses. And I want to give you a quick overview about what this means. Because this is normally where it gets complicated really quickly for a lot of people. So in the orange thingy on the corner, we have your own software component, which you've wrote, whatever. And now you combine it with a copyleft component. Here, there's even a differentiation between copylefted, or the components with copyleft, or licensed with a copyleft, with strong copyleft, or here strongly reciprocal, and a standard reciprocal. I hope I pronounced that right. So normally it's called strong and weak copyleft. With a strong copyleft, GPL, most famous example, it means you combine your stuff. So if you use it as a normal library, or if you change something on that code, on this component, it's a derivative work, and it has to be under the license, like the GPL, it has to stay under that. This is the right case, like so. So it means it keeps the same rights and laws you have to fulfill. On the left, you see there's another possibility, which is called combined work with strong separation. This is a tricky one. So it means there is a way to kind of get a bit around about the GPL, but as soon as you try to get around it and don't use it in a proper way, you kind of already screwed up and you can't use this way. So it normally means a good example how you can do is imagine you have a tool which does some data analysis, and it will create a nice PDF with some graphs on it. And so you include into your project, into your small analysis and graph writing thingy, PDF viewer. And use one which is under GPL, you put it in, and you kind of already created the PDF, and you call it via a command line comment from in your code, like run this tool, open it up in a separate window or something, and show this PDF. This you would call a combined work with strong separation. This would be fine. Then the PDF viewer would be GPL, and you can do with your code whatever you want. You can do it commercially, also another copyleft or permissive license. So why is this possible? Because you're using officially interfaces. So if you interact with this program in an interface which was created by the developers, by the rights owners, and you say, okay, I'm using this like a command line interface or something, this is fine, because this is a normal intended use by the developer who owns the rights. What's not possible is to write a command line interface for a tool, push it there, and then use this on the other side, or as soon as you share objects or whatever internally, you're screwed anyway. So this is really something which is more the idea you combine tools which are all existing already and you just kind of put it in one installation thing, or you put it together in one interface in a way, but you use it in a way like you would use the tools normally if they would be standalone as well. And your code has to be working standalone and their code still has to be working standalone. So then you can work with GPL in your stuff. And a common example is you have your, if you have a distribution or something for Linux, okay, that's a special thing, but even if you have Windows or something and it could be shipped with GPL applications, because these applications are standalone or something, it's totally fine and they are not influencing like all of Windows. Okay, now this is like the hard copyleft. So in general, you can say you use copyleft, you get under their license. Just if you have it really, really loosely coupled, there's a possibility. But as soon as you try to reach a state by creating this barrier on your own, you're screwed, because here it's about intention. If your intention is to get around the GPL, you don't have any chance with the lawyers. Because this is really strict, something like a weak copyleft was introduced. The most well-known is the LGPL. The lesser GPL, they wanted to show that this is not as good as the real GPL, but a lot of people prefer it. And it was introduced because there was a need for it. But as I said, a lot of people prefer it because you give the people a little bit more freedom to decide what they want to do. So the idea is if you combine it and you don't change the LGPL code or something and you just use it in a library, you have your work, which you can put under your license, and you have the LGPL library, which is under LGPL. If somebody would ask you for your code, you would have to give them the LGPL code, but not your own. If you change something, you might have to do this as well. But it's not as simple as it sounds at first, because there still has to be a separation, meaning the user has to be able to exchange the library. So he has to be able to take this piece out and take another LGPL library or whatever, another library in there. So you perhaps have to publish some parts of your code so that they are able, or create a solution in a way with your software architecture that you can simply say, okay, I'm not using this version of the library, but I changed something, I improved something to make it faster, whatever, and I can include it in your code. This has to be possible. Obviously, for different programming languages, this means different approaches. For some, this works really well because, especially, and it depends on your type of linkage and stuff. Sometimes it just, you have to install it somewhere, so they just install another version on the system and it's fine. Sometimes you have to provide a bit of your code, of your APIs, of your interfaces or whatever, and especially create a specific architecture before. So LGPL you can include, but it might depend on how your software is. If you can't fulfill this requirements, then it's again a derivative work, meaning the result has to be under LGPL. And last, we come to the permissive components. Yeah, BSD, MIT, Apache. With this, the nice thing is you can do whatever. If you mix it up, you can put everything under your license in the end. If you don't change it or something, you normally say it's a combined work. This is stay under the license. Your code's done under your license, and you can do whatever. So with the right part, you can do also proprietary software, and you can do kind of whatever you want. With GPL, it's a little bit more complicated. Commercialization is still possible, but perhaps not in the way like with proprietary software. Okay, so I hope you could kind of follow me through this, because this is kind of important if you want to clean up your code. So if you use third-party code, to put this a little bit in a nutshell, is you have to check their license. And you have to check how you integrate it. So is it a loose coupling? Is this linking? Is it source code you copy? And it depends also again, lastly, like how you distribute your code. And this all has influence on which license you can choose for your software. If you use something with copyleft, you might have to use exactly this copyleft license. If you use something with weak copyleft, it has influence on how you create your structure from your code. And if you have something permissive, you normally are totally easily unhappy. And the distribution is also kind of important because all these licenses always become really active, you could say, when you distribute. Meaning, while you get all these permissions to do whatever you want, you have certain rights to have, these permissions. You also have certain things you have to follow. So there's some stuff you have to do. The one thing we already heard is it can be for copyleft to put it under the same license or something. This is really, really strict, but there's also further small stuff, which can be important depending if you ship it really as an executable or just put it somewhere and say, okay, you can get it on your own. And same is for third-party code. If you just give instructions, get yourself all these list of requirements, install it on your computer or something, you have to check that the result is still under compatible license and this works out, but you don't have to fulfill everything this license says. Because licenses say stuff like you have to provide the license text, you have to provide sometimes further other notes, like for GPL, if you have a GUI, like an interface, you have to have a hint somewhere there and stuff like that. And it always depends on the license and often on the distribution type, what you have to fulfill yourself or which you can kind of outsource to the user who's building the software themselves. So this is kind of important. Think about these things. And I can't list it for all the licenses, but most of them require that you send the license text or give the license text and stuff like that. Okay, let's get back to our process. So now we have a little bit of knowledge about analyzing the license term of our third-party code. So we might have checked what we used. If it's just permissive stuff, normally you can just go ahead and say, okay, this is easy, this is not much to do. And if you have copyleft or something, you should check, do you want to perhaps replace it, depending on what license you want to pick and what goal you want to have. So do you want that a lot of people use it freely, even in commercial use, because you perhaps get some pull requests back or something, get some code optimizations or whatever, or do you say, okay, it should stay open and it has to be, it's a mentality thing. So When you decided this, you are really, really good. So when you checked all this stuff, like export control and whatever, you're now in a good position to say, okay, is it worth it? Can I publish it? Or do I perhaps have stuff from different copyleft licenses in my thing? Then I have to change things first. And is it worth for me to do this? If it's a really tiny script and you have screwed up with the copyleft licenses, perhaps it's too much effort. But perhaps you say, okay, I want to do this. I want to do it clean. So now you have to determine the details of your publication and implement all the tasks you thought about. The first thing is define which license term you take and put it all in your code. Which form of publication? Do you want to create executables with your ship or will you just provide your code and perhaps a list of instructions how to set it up? And which kind of support strategy do you want to go? So when it's just perhaps a small script you throw out there, you perhaps have the README in there, perhaps you have an email address which people can contact, or you have a nice issue tracker from GitHub you're using to interact with people. If it's a big project, you should think about something else, like do you have a forum or FAQs or how-to tutorials and whatever to support people using your code. And then you have to prepare your software for publication, and this will be a little bit what we'll talk about a little bit later, what this means. Because throwing your code out there might seem helpful, but often isn't. Because, I mean, how many people have perhaps found some code, but there was no documentation, so you had no clue how to run it or how to install it, or you got in problems. So short show of hands, who tried to use code from other people because it sounded great at the beginning, but then stop doing because, yeah, you couldn't. You just couldn't. Okay, that's a lot more people. So this is an important factor. And I want to talk about this too, not just about the license part. And last, checks the requirements for your publication and release the software. Means have you done everything which the license says and stuff like that. And last, publish the software. Put it somewhere. So, I screwed something up. Now we talked about, I mentioned you need to prepare your code. And I brought a list of minimal generic recommendations because in the end, it always depends on your project, what you need to do. But this is like what I think is kind of the minimum you should do for your project, even if it's just a small thing. This is based on something my colleagues and I wrote, which is called the DLR Software Engineering Guidelines, where you find a checklist of things to do. But this is like a generic wrap-up. So the first thing sounds really stupid, but put your code under version control system. Do this from the start so people can understand what you did. Put in good commit codes, use tags, use releases, stuff like that. I give this talk to researchers and they don't do this. So this is why this is in there. It sounds like totally, yeah, that's the first thing all of us might do as a computer scientist, but researchers who write code, they send around tar files and stuff like that. Then apply a basic coding style. Also something a lot of people think they do, but they don't probably do, so use a linter. Get some help to get your code clean up because it helps a lot for reading. And while you go with the modular design, don't do over-engineering. This is a lot of computer scientists tend to do. They try to create a solution which is extendable for everything you could imagine, and then nobody can use it. Automation, great thing to include, especially to get a usable version. It's really helpful for your user if they can have one. Sorry. And provide the essential documentation. This is something which sounds also, again, like a really, really boring, easy thing, and everybody should do this. But we checked on GitHub, and a lot of projects don't have a README or a README which is not really helpful. And what a helpful README looks like, I'll show you in a sec. Then, again, test your software. Assign a proper release number. Things, again, basics, not happening for a lot of projects. And if you do public releases, here's something I wanted to take out. It checks the open source guidelines. This is kind of what I talked about. Do this whole process, what you have to check for if you want to do a public release and don't just use it internally, but if you give it to others, do this. If your code is properly, and so others can use it in a legal way without getting in trouble. Because a lot of code I want to reuse, it's not properly licensed, or they didn't check their third-party licenses properly, or they don't make it obvious for me that they do it. So I have a problem with that. So what means license checking? We also mentioned that. So when you clean up your code like that, one of the things is you have to, when you prepare your code, is to choose a license. So first you have to make sure that they comply with the restriction from the third-party dependencies you used. And then you have to prepare your code in a way that you add a license file to your repository, that you add the license and copyright hints to all your files. A lot of people don't do that. And document the third-party dependencies. So how does this look like? You add a license file. This is from the MIT license. I give this talk normally to researchers, and they have really stupid ideas. For example, they change the license text. When you use something like MIT, you can't do that. Then it's not MIT license anymore, and you should keep the license as it is because people know how to deal with it, what it means. If you change something, they have to read it. So this is also a reason not to use your own license. A lot of people love to use their own licenses. I hate it because I read the name. I don't know what it is. It means I have to read the license. I have to understand it, and I have to understand it correctly. So please use an existence license everybody knows about. And the only thing you're allowed to adopt is the copyright hint. Again, this is a lot of people, so they are really happy with, I'm not allowed to change anything, and they don't change the copyright hint. So this is something you have to adapt. You really find a lot of licenses where there's just a hashtag like copyright holder, and then it's like, great, close, nearly, please, this tiny thing do. And then you can add the copyright hint license into the source file. And what you see in a lot of code is that they copy the whole license text, which is legally completely correct. But it's really, really annoying, because sometimes you have a really short file and like three times the file content is like the whole license. And with MIT, we saw the whole license. It's just okay. But with GPL, it's pages and pages. So this doesn't make sense. So there's a new nice way to do this, which is called SPDX. It's a copyright hint. It's readable automatically, so machine readable. And you just put in your copyright text and a license identifier, and this is this. And the license has to, so you put the whole license text still in your project. It just stored in the licenses folder, and it has exactly the tag you use here. Like it's an MIT.txt file, and so it matches automatically the tag to the file name. So this is really nice. It's something which was defined by the Reuse Software Initiative, and they even have a small tool which will put all of this where you can enter, like, I want this license and for all of these file types and so on. And it will put it in all your code. And if you have files which are not code files, but for example, images or something, you can also say, okay, do this. And they will put a nice small file next to it, which it has exactly the same file name like the other one, like logo.png and then .license. And in this is nothing except this copyright and license hint. And you can also use it for stuff like Creative Commons or whatever to have everything perfectly labeled, which is great because everything which is not code shouldn't be under open source licenses, but use stuff like the Creative Commons licenses instead. Because if you want to reuse stuff, this is the only thing which makes really sense. And this really helps you do this. So they have a great site where they explain everything, and there's this tool which is really helpful and getting improved a lot. Also important for your license stuff is to document your dependencies. You have to do it. You can, on the one hand, you have often, like for Python, a requirement txt where you can write your license. Important is that the dependencies you have. Important is that you list also which version you're using, as well as under which license they is. They are, here's the license information are in the readme file itself, though it's written in brackets that it's like BSD 3 clause and something. And because you don't provide it in this project where we have this from, we don't provide the libraries ourselves. We say you get it via pip or something. We don't have to ship their license files. If you create an executable and ship it, you have to get all these license files from them. And my suggestion is, or it's quite important to really copy it from their project and not reuse, even if there's like you have 10 libraries who are all on MIT, copy it of all of them, because they have different copyright hints and they might have further information or whatever in these files, and say you have to take their files. Also, it's not enough to make a link or something. So, and regarding the version, licenses may change from one version to another. PySide was such an example, they went to a commercial license from an open source license, so it's important that you state which version you are using, so it's clear you're using the license of this version and not of a later version where they perhaps changed it. This is just example. Everything is cleaned up, stuff. Sorry, I just have 1 minute, so I have to go quickly through it, but I kind of explained that already. That you should clean up your code and stuff. This can look like this. Use releases, use tags, especially with GitLab, it's nice quite easily. Have a good documentation. A README is great. A README should have the following sections. A software purpose, so again, sounds really basic. It's missing of nearly all the READMEs I stumble across. Like, what is it, for whom, and why have you written it? for example, this is just a small proof of concept. It's an important information for somebody who's using it, or this is a project we're using live in a big production facility or whatever. Talk about the main features. Talk about restraints, like this is just tested with Python 3.4 and Windows or something. And make sure that you explain how to install it, how to use it, and also perhaps give a rough idea about future plans and ideas that people know where you're going with this, so if it makes sense for them to get included, or is this going perhaps in a direction they don't plan or didn't expect. If you're interested to get a little bit more detailed how this looks like, I will perhaps later provide this slide, so there's a workshop we give which is just about make your code ready for publication. So in the end, the list of recommendations I want to give you is to know who has exploitation rights. Ah, that's a word I was missing in the beginning, the exploitation rights. Great, on my last slide I have it. So you have the ownership rights. You might have the exploitation rights if it's your code, if you worked it, created it while you work for a company, they have it. Talk to those people. If you accept external contributions, either be aware that you have then other people who have exploitation rights. You can create a contributor license agreement where they handed their exploitation rights to you. Or you ensure you select the right license on the very beginning, because changing the license is really hard if you don't have all the rights, because you have to ask everybody and they might disappear, and then you have to check like in and try to find them. And we once had to find somebody who went somewhere to South America to live in the jungle, and we failed. So we couldn't relicense. When using third-party code, check the license early. If you want to have the possibility to go commercial or use a permissive license, avoid GPL or be careful when you introduce it. Think about license compatibility. Don't get different code which then doesn't work together. And for the love of God, use a standard OS license I can understand quickly, and I don't want to read your license because, this is not fun. And make your code usable for others, make it clean, make it understandable, document it, give an instructions, all of this, so others don't get frustrated by using it. And while all of this makes sound publishing something as open source software perhaps a little bit scary and a lot of effort, it doesn't get better when you do it in a proprietary license, because you have to do all the same things. But you have to think about your own license and that nobody else is going with your stuff, and how you give support and stuff like this, because then people expect a little bit more. So it's all of this and more work. And with this, I'm on the end. Thank you very much. And if you have, perhaps we have some time for questions.
We got 5 minutes for questions?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. So I have one question about public domain licensing, and then one about dual licensing. So I read an article at some point a while ago that said that public domain sounds like the most liberal thing, but it's not in all papers.
Exactly. Public domain, so if perhaps because the mic was a bit off, I repeat really quick. Public domain, if it's really the most freedom thing, or it's not really acknowledged everywhere, and that's exactly the problem. In Germany, for example, it doesn't work because you have the Urheberrecht, which means, so public domains means you give away all your rights. So you say, here, this is a community, I don't have anything to do. You kind of cut yourself close. Off of it. In Germany, that doesn't work because you have the Urheberrecht. You always have the ownership. You can't do this. So legally in the US, this works. In Germany, not. So you could say it's not valuable. So it's kind of no license. But before, if you talk with a lawyer or a judge or whatever, they would say it shows that the intention was given that it's public domain, that you can do whatever. So if somebody would say, so you use public domain in Germany or whatever, and so then the owner comes and says, oh, I still have the ownership in Germany, so I can sue you because you used it in a way, and because public domain is not a legal construct in Germany, the lawyer, as a judge might perhaps say, yeah, but you really made clear your intention. So it's a bit tricky, Also, for example, with public domain, you don't have to state that it's public domain or something, because you don't have to give any contribution. I always, if I use public domain, write in that it's public domain and where I got it, so I'm still giving contribution, because I want to make it visible for others that I took care of that. So I think you can use it, because, yeah, normally, in the end, legally, it's not really clean, but it should work out. And now I forgot your second question. Oh, dual licenses. So dual licensing is normally something you do, like you use one copyleft license and you use a commercial. That's the normal combination. This means, for example, you put something under GPL and somebody can, so everybody can use it who's happy with using GPL, but if you want to put it in your commercial project, you have to go and pay. So that's the idea behind it. So you pay then for a commercial license, and this is allowed to do because the owner can decide that, like, this version I built, like this executable, because I have all the rights. If I have all the rights, I can say this is GPL, and I can take this other one and say this is a commercial one. I can do this. They are like two entities. And so as an owner, I can do this. I don't recommend it really a lot, but it's done by some companies to get, like a big community to use it and perhaps even give code back and improve it and stuff. And on the other hand, still do a commercialization. Was this a question or? Oh, okay. This exists too, like several.
The audience. So, for example, if you have GPL and BSD and MIT, simply to just say, I don't really know what the sum of this is. I just want to make it the most easy for everyone to adapt on their terms. Is that an option? And is that possibly like what you're aiming for with the public domain, but more digestible for anyone who cares about licenses?
Yes. So there's some licenses who do stuff like that. So there's like GPL3 and newer or whatever, so you have all this family, you don't have to relicense. But there's also some who you can say, oh, this is MIT and BSD or whatever, to give people the possibility to not run into license compatibility issues. So this exists, people do this. Then it's really important that you state in your project when you use it under which license you're using it, because for the next user and stuff, this can be relevant. This is done by some people, but it can get complicated regarding third-party you use, and also because of the stuff which is sometimes written in the licenses. So it depends. Some you can combine really well, some you can't, because some say you have to do this and that. And yeah, so it's a bit, it depends, because they have, it was the licenses say. Some you can combine and you can do this as a dual licensing or parallel licensing, with others you can't. But it means a lot of effort, because for all of those you have to have a special, like then CI build or something, which provides, for example, the license tag in each file. And normally you should have in Git or something, a lot of these licenses say you have to have it in the file already, not just when you create the executable, meaning you would have to have your own license, which include all these possibilities or whatever. And so it gets complicated really quickly again, because, you have to have one copy of your code, you would say, with different license tags for every separate license. That's why not a lot of people do it, because it's a lot of effort to stay all of this in sync.
One quick last question.
Yeah. Do you know any sanity check in either GitLab or GitHub that will verify if you're using GPL when you're trying to do MIT? So if you tag something as MIT and you have everything, including libraries that is GPL, is there anything in either GitLab or GitHub that will warn you or you're doing something that's not compatible, or is there an open source project that will check your open source project?
So there's tools which check this, they're not open source, the really good ones. So there's one open source which is okay-ish, the really good ones, which will do all those legal things. They will check and they will create the lists and everything. They cost around 6 figures. So the good tools are really expensive, because this is a lot of effort and there's a lot of manual effort behind it. So not really. there's some tools who will at least check, like, who are all the licenses you have, Other files which don't have a license header, so you have to check for that. And this is the list of licenses you have in there, and you can have a first glance over it, and they will try to give you some info and warnings and stuff, but it's not that they do everything for you. I forgot, to be honest, which the name was from the one open source tool. It looks like really from the 90s or something. I can look it up if you find me later what the name was. And yeah, part of that, no, in GitLab, GitHub, there's nothing yet really included. It would be great.
Thank you very much.